Welcome to the Dignity and Respect in Action podcast. This series is brought to you by the UMass Office of Equity and Inclusion and features members of the university community and other experts in the field of diversity, equity, and inclusion. In these episodes, we'll learn about the work and experiences of our guests and gain insight from their expertise. Your host for this podcast is Dr. Nefertiti Walker, Vice Chancellor of Equity and Inclusion and Professor of Sport Management in the Eisenberg School of Management. And now, here's Nef.
Welcome to the Dignity and Respect in Action podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nefertiti Walker. Today, we have an excellent podcast for you as we kick off the fall semester. Dr. Jimmy Chandler, professor at the College of Nursing, is here with us today to talk about resilience. Dr. Chandler's research examines how we each can respond to past, present, and future stress by building our resilience and creating an environment for empowerment. We will be chatting about how we can think about resilience as a campus community while we are continuing to process the events of the past year and a half, but also how we can take care of ourselves and how we can empower resilience amongst our personal communities. Dr. Chandler, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We're very happy to have you here with this very timely topic. And I think introducing this topic at this point in the semester is really important. Perhaps before folks on our campus begin to really feel the stress of the semester. So I like to start the podcast by just asking our guests to introduce themselves. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how did you get here at UMass? What's your story? What's your UMass story?
Thank you. Well, I want to start off with, my background's in nursing. And so I'm always thinking about health. And a precept of nursing has always been that health is a combination of the individual and the environment. And certainly more recently, we've talked a lot about the social determinants of health, right? Such as the, your income level or ethnicity or educational level, all those things impact health. So I'm always thinking about that. Let's just start there. And before I came here to UMass, I was a nurse manager at McLean Hospital in Boston, Beth Israel Hospital in Boston, and on mental health units. And on those units, half the folks there had attempted suicide and half had were hoping to attempt suicide. So it's a population that I understood and understood well. Patients were struggling. And since we, as nurses and doctors, focused on their problems, I designed a program for the nurses to really look at people's strengths, so help them manage their stress so they can leave the unit with a preferred future, not kind of what was always bothering them. And I had a really good, great fortune to work with Carol Gilligan, who wrote the book in a Different Voice, and Jean Baker Miller, who wrote Toward the New Psychology of Women, both women in the 80s, who at that time inclusion was thought to be just bringing women to the table. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of our first step. And I knew about mental health and I knew about the patients I was working with, but I was managing units. So I wanted to learn about more how to manage a bigger unit. And I went to Harvard School of Public Health in their executive program to understand that a little bit more. And then to the University of Utah, which had a doctoral program in nursing. At the time, there weren't a lot of doctoral programs in nursing in this country. So we were headed west anyway to manage this company. So I thought I'd ski a whole lot and get my doctorate at the same time, which I did. So then I came here to UMass thinking about, how do we create a work environment? Because that was my interest on running these units. How do we create a work environment to empower employees so they can in turn empower the patients? And what my research looked at was that what we need is in the environment is really, as I said in the beginning, we're connecting to health and environment. And my own research, when I interviewed or surveyed 200 nurses, it was that we need the right relationships. So we have the access to the right resources. And that was key. And those right relationships would be their nurse managers, their peers, their colleagues, and then they could access the resources they need to do their job well. So it wasn't just the individual, it was the individual and the environment. And that's how I got here at UMass, and that's what I came with. So I came knowing that mental health is important and it's key to build on your strengths, and that inclusion meant including everybody at the table, and mm-hmm. empowerment was the interaction between the individual and the environment. So the individual needs to supply, the environment needs to supply the individual with the resources they need to do a good job.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's something that really stuck out to me as you were explaining both your definition, how you conceptualize resiliency and resilience in our community, was the environment piece and the environment needing to provide something for the individual. I'm not sure, at least in my understandings of resiliency in the ways, which is very elementary, I must admit, I haven't thought about that piece of it, right? When we think about our campus community and providing for the most marginalized, historically marginalized identities on our campus community, that's often what we're trying to do, is understand their experiences so that we can find the deficits and then provide, you know, with our environment, with our culture, their needs, things that will support them. And I think that's just really powerful. So I wanted to take a second to highlight that, because that puts a little bit of ownership on us as an institution, right?
Absolutely.
As administrators and faculty and staff, both on the receiving and the giving side of resiliency, both having to create in our jobs the environment that can support folks, but also needing that support ourselves.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. Sean Harper talked about that, African-American athlete, California. He talks about how, you know, it's really, if we don't change what's happening around us, right? So we think about resilience as typically bouncing back from adversity. But actually, nobody bounces, not even our Navy SEALs or our first responders. You know, that implies we automatically do it. Well, they've been well trained, right? So we really, it's a recovery from stress. And first we have to, we all think, can I really do this, right? When something happens to us. And so we all have a struggle. And in that struggle, we might begin to feel alone and isolated. But in fact, if you've been through childhood, you've been resilient, right? I mean, we all kind of fall down and get back up. But that bounces back and then pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, that is a good start. I mean, our internal attributes are important, mm-hmm. but that's only the beginning. And our grit and our push through the pain attitude is not sustainable mm-hmm. unless we connect to our relationships, which connects to our resources. And mm-hmm. so that's my definition of resilience. And that is the definition of, for 20 years of resilience research. Resilience research has said that it's really key to also have these relationships and these resources. It's a process of that. Nobody does it alone. Not our superstar athletes, not our politicians, mm-hmm. not our you know, famous people. They all have three buses outside the arena. You know, those are people that are supporting them.
Yeah.
They're not doing it alone.
Yeah.
Right. That's what we need to know, that we might start there, but then we have to reach out. And we have to reach out sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. So if we think I got a bad grade on the quiz and no one else did, or my grandmother's ill and no one else is, just connect to people first.
You know? Yeah.
Isolate some, but then think, okay, who can I talk to about this? Who can I connect to? Mm-hmm. Who would understand this? That's key.
Yeah. Thank you for that. So you've talked about how you take a different view of resilience than the dominant cultural ideas of rugged individualism. And this makes me realize that our listeners may not all have the same singular definition of resilience. So you spoke a little bit about this previously in your introduction, but can you talk a little bit more about your definition of resilience or the definition that you find most useful to our listeners and to your work?
Yeah. So it really would be, you know, starting with our internal attributes and then building on our strengths and cultivating connections. Okay. So those are the ABCs, really. Active coping, you know, we're building on what we have and we're asking folks and thinking ourselves, what's worked before for me? And then adding new tools such as, well, I could also add mindfulness or exercise or talking to a friend, things like that. So that's active coping. And two, building on strengths, right? We all have strengths. And as you said earlier that, you know, we try to help people figure out their deficits. Well, I'm going to ask our audience to put that aside because we know our problems really well. All of our students and ourselves, we're really experts at saying, well, this is what I can't do. And this is what I need to improve. In fact, if you're, you know, I've worked with a number of athletes. If you're an athlete from first grade on, you're thinking, what can I do better? You know, what can I, how can I improve this? Well, we've got that down. And that side of our brain, that kind of stress side, what can I do better, is well developed. And I would ask that everyone know, put that aside even for one meeting, because I'm telling you, the problems are still going to be there. Don't worry about it. What I want you to ask is that, so what's going well for you? Take an appreciative inquiry approach, right? What can you do? What's going well? What can you do well? And what are the good things in your life? And start there. I mean, our own psychiatrist here on campus, Sue Ellen Hampkins, wrote a book called The Art of Narrative Psychiatry. Even when she sees her patients, she starts off with, what are your strengths? How can we build on those? Mm-hmm. And then once you figure that out, in my course, we have people actually take a strengths assessment. So they know their top five strengths. And I often work with the strongest people on campus, football and basketball players, soccer players, and they actually have no idea what their strengths are because they're, you know, but they do know discipline and they do know practice. And that's the key. If we want to change our brain and listen to our body and embolden our spirit, we have to practice. Mm-hmm. Right? We can't just say, here are your five strengths, good luck. What in the class, we say, here are your five strengths. So how are you going to use them this week? You know, if you're a relator, how are you going to use that? Well, I'm going to call my little brother. He's struggling with math. I'm going to make sure he does that. And I'm going to connect with him. I said, there you go. There you are. You're a relator, right? So we choose moments where we can make that happen.
Yeah.
And then once we build on our strengths, then we look at the C, active coping, building strengths, cultivating connections. And that's where we look at who have been our past mentors, who are our current people that we rely on. And who are our people in the future we'd like to have help us out? And we build that network out.
Yeah, thank you for that. The piece that you discussed related to athletes resonates with me as a former college basketball player, being very aware of your weaknesses and the parts of your game that you need to build on and make better to be more competitive and to be a better athlete. And just not spending a lot of time on the things that you do well, right? It's like, okay, well, I have that down pat. I need to work on this part of my game to be better. So yeah, I love that piece of it. So can you tell us a little bit more about how this understanding of resilience can help a community recover from stressful or traumatic events? I mean, I think all of us, there's no one who can say that they haven't gone through a stressful or traumatic event, especially considering what we've all gone through over the course of the last 18 months or so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So repeat the beginning of that question.
Yeah, so essentially tell us more about how this understanding, your definition, the way that you conceptualize resilience, mm-hmm. a community recover from stress, stressful or traumatic events.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I was very interested in trauma. And working on mental health units, I knew that, you know, 90% of our folks had had trauma in their life. And it wasn't until I was presenting in a national conference on how we were creating these mental health units so people could focus on what's worked for them and how they could move forward. And so I was talking about that. And I was most interested on these units on how to decrease coercive practices, because sometimes, you know, we just focus on problems on units. We might restrain people and, you know, but they've already had trauma. So why would we re-traumatize people? Mm-hmm. So we have to think about what we're doing and it's called trauma-informed care. So recognizing that people have had trauma before. So how would you approach them so they wouldn't be re-traumatized in a kind, careful, thoughtful way. And at that conference, I met Vince Felitti, who was one of the originators of the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, the ACE study. And he said, you know, Janae, all these folks you're working with have had adversity in their childhood. I was like, really? He said, yeah, I'm sure they have. So they are set up kind of for this adversity to continue on in their life. And what we know, and what I actually wrote a paper on, was the health consequences of adverse childhood experiences. And they're all of our national health problems. They're obesity, diabetes, hypertension, depression, homelessness. So there are psychological problems, physical problems, and social problems are all correlated with adverse childhood experiences.
Wow.
So my goal then became, being a nurse, I'm kind of an action-oriented person. I can't just read about things. I'm like, okay, what are we going to do about it?
Which is a good thing.
Yeah. And my goal became to disrupt the trajectory from adversity to illness. And that's how I started thinking, how am I going to do that? Right? Mm-hmm. How am I going to help people? And I thought about my work in the mental health units. And I thought, well, why wait? Why wait for people to be so struggling that they're on a mental health unit? Why not start sooner? Let's start with our students. Let's start up front. And that's where I developed the resilience course. And I knew that I took what I knew, kind of the mindfulness and yoga piece, so people could focus, calm down, pay attention. But that is not enough for me. I'm going to research one university. I can't just teach skills. I need to teach the research behind it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what students are hungry for too. Like, why is this happening? So I teach a little bit of the neurobiology of stress or the pedagogy of strengths. And then we write about that experience. So this course then, and what I suggest is that we keep the focus on the student. And so, or on whatever, whoever our participant is, and they write their story in response to a resilience, in response to a strength they have. So the second class, they're writing about what I'm good at, which is really hard for people to write about. And so I asked not to do a big thing. Like, I'm good at, you know, I had a science award, but a little thing. I'm a good listener. I'm a good friend, right? And they start writing there. So they feel that inside themselves, that they have this already. And I build on that. And that's why I can teach football players and engineers and nurses on the front line, because it's not my story, it's their story. That's what I work with.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that. So I think we've discussed this a bit, but really intentionally, I think we have to acknowledge that we feel the urgency to have this conversation right now about resiliency because of the trauma that we've gone through as a community, that we're continuing to go through, the stressors that we're continuing to deal with as they relate to the pandemic and the coronavirus collectively and as individuals, and what we've gone through, as we've said a few times now over the past year or so. I don't want to cause anxiety by actually ticking through all of the various things related to social justice movements, related to anti-Black violence, on and on, that have happened. And that's brought us to this moment of, for some, feeling quite overwhelmed. What are some things that we can do individually to support students and staff and faculty to feel more resilient and empowered as we come back to campus?
So what I learned in my first study about empowerment, when I was looking about, you know, how to empower employees or the staff to do the best job they can, you know, they need to have, as I said, access to relationships so they can have access to the right information, the right support, and the right opportunities, right? So those things we have to think about. What is right for you would be different for me, right? So it's really small in moments. And, you know, we can have kind of sweeping proclamations, like everybody should be resilient and this is how we should do it. But it's really comes down to, okay, so how are you going to do it? How are you going to make this happen, right? And that's where people kind of telling their own story, and we sitting back and realizing they are the expert in their own experience, right? We're just here to kind of coach and make that happen and create this environment so that experience can manifest. And I think that, you know, if we kind of decrease the power hierarchy, you know, go to collaboration rather than control, we'll see better outcome.
Thank you for that. What is something that you wish more people knew about trauma and resilience?
Yeah, I think that that it comes in different ways, and that trauma, as Meinecke said in his book on my grandmother's hands, it's passed on through generations, right? But so is resilience, passed on through generations. So some people come that way. And if you and I looked into the nursery of a hospital and we saw these little babies who just born like an hour ago, some of them look more resilient than others already, you know? So some people come that way. It's in their DNA. Other people, it's in their family, right? When I was walking my grandson, who's was 2 years old, he's running down the road in his Timberland boots and falls, you know, face first on the pebbles. And he just pops up and says, "I'm okay, I'm okay." And I heard his parents' voice saying, you know, when he's running around the house, "You're okay, you're okay. We can manage this." So some families pass that on, right? But the rest of us, like me, first generation, didn't have a family that passed that on. My family passed the stress on. And, you know, so I had to learn it. Mm-hmm. And that's where we have to say then, okay, then most of us have to know that resilience is teachable. We can learn it by learning the ABCs, active coping, building strength, cultivating connections. And we can learn it through what we do in class, is the four R's: relaxation, research, writing, and reflection. And so sharing stories is really important. And it's not just sharing, and it's not just kind of writing. I'm kind of against this approach on the internet now, where people just kind of write their stories of trauma. I think it can be very triggering. Uh-huh. So I have folks write for about 5 minutes. That's it. And you can't write that much, but you can write something that's really important to you. And then when they share it, they read their story and they hear from other folks kind of what was strong about the story or what stayed with you. So they don't hear criticism. And we know as writers that the support helps you write more. Uh-huh. And so students talk about how it was so important for me to hear, you know, what went well, what I'm doing well. And now I want to tell more of that story. And they end up doing that. You know, so I just want to read one of the final presentations. It's about 30 seconds long here. And this is one of the fellows he wrote. "In this class, we focus on individual growth. Sometimes life gets hard and it's a slippery slope. The ability to use the strength you didn't even know you had is dope. And Jim and Ginny should just put an S on their chest because they give me hope. Understanding that you need people and you need healing responding to adversity can be a scary feeling. Remembering all the people that got me here today, I'm proud they helped me along my way. I'm healing. I'm happy all those people helped me get who I'm supposed to be. There were times I was moving like Stevie Wonder. I couldn't even see. Soon as I've seen what good I had to take advantage, I fell down a few times, but then I threw on a bandage. Developing, that's one of my strengths. I'm a young man. I'm still growing. Seeing my potential on the inside got me glowing. I'm so thankful for the adversity I've dealt with. It got me this far. Don't like the dark times, but they also bring out the stars."
Wow.
So this,
that's beautiful.
Just, that was his final presentation. He got the whole thing. You know, that yes, resilience is having stress, then feeling a struggle, right? Then settling back down and telling your story and finding your strength. Uh-huh. So that's what he did get, that it takes that vulnerability. You know, Brené Brown says vulnerability is the seeds of courage. That vulnerability is what makes us resilient. Uh-huh. Right? So we have to have both those things. That's what I wish people would know.
Wow. That was beautiful. Wow.
I know.
By that student.
Well, I always say, you know, I could go on and on and talk about this, but it's really the people that, you know, their own voice is the strongest.
Yeah. And as you were reading it, I was sort of capturing the various elements of resilience that you share with us today. And that student seems to have captured it perfectly.
I know. I'm always like, oh my gosh, who are these people? And I always want to have a TA with me and an RA, and especially if I'm working with, you know, folks that are younger, folks that are different ethnicity, different race, I want to have those be my TAs. So mm-hmm. we partner. And so the coaches always say, "Well, which one would you choose?" I say, "Any one of them. Give me any one of them." They said, no, choose the best. I said, "Any one of them."
Yeah.
Any one of them. They get it.
Yeah. They get it.
Absolutely.
Dr. Chandler, thank you so much for this moment. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, one last thing, Dr. Walker, is that I think we have to walk our talk, you know, you and I, you know. So two examples is that, you know, when I was diagnosed with cancer years ago, I was devastated, as one could imagine. You hear the C word and you just, you know, so unhappy. And so, you know, after surgery, I came out and, you know, I had one of our own DNP students, actually, and she was, you know, kind of taking care of things and said to me, well, you know, Ginny, what's happened recently in your life that's been good? I was like, what? Everything's horrible, I'm thinking to myself. And I think, well, you know, my daughter's pregnant, actually. And I said that and I could feel the cells in my body turn around. And I thought, that's what I have to be thinking. That's what's going to be healing, is knowing, you know, what the good is.
Yeah.
And then that just happened recently when my son went back to Denver. I was so bummed out. I was sad. And I know you have to feel those feelings. And then I said to my, you know, husband, this is so hard for me. And then he said, well, because Michael's your baby. I'm like, oh. And so I thought, well, what can I do about this? And so, you know, I thought, well, how do I cope? And I swim or I bike. So I was going swimming that morning. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And what are my strengths? Well, my strengths are connecting. I'm going to call my friend and tell her how much I miss Michael. And cultivating connections, I'm going to write to him a text and say what the visit was like for me and how I'm looking forward to our next visit. So I tried to use my own strengths and my ABCs in my own life. And I do try to walk my talk. And I think that that's felt when I teach these things.
Well, I'm going to walk your talk. So thank you. Thank you for sharing the ABCs with me, because I will absolutely begin to incorporate them. I feel like in some ways, intuitively, I tried, but I don't think following that particular methodology, I have not done. And I appreciate you sharing that with me, as well as our audience that's listening today.
Yeah. You know, we just are, as health providers, we diagnose and treat. As educators, we assess and remediate. Put that aside. Mm-hmm. Let's just look at what's working.
Yeah. Dr. Chandler, thank you so much. I want to take a quick moment to remind folks who are listening that there are resources on campus. If you're struggling, mental health care is an important part of your health and well-being. The Center for Counseling and Psychological Health has 24/7 emergency call-in services and confidential support available for students. There is also the Faculty and Staff Assistance Program, which provides wonderful support and services for everyone who works at UMass. Please take a look at the episode description to find a link to the resources that I've mentioned in this podcast. You can also find a list of resources on the Office of Equity and Inclusion webpage at umass.edu/diversity. Thank you so much again, Dr. Chandler, for being with us today. I thank you for all that you're doing to improve our understanding of resilience, all that you're doing for our community to build resilience amongst our students. It's absolutely fantastic. And I've actually heard about your work for years, so it's very nice to finally be able to, I met you in person, and finally now, you know, to be able to have this moment to talk with you. So thank you. A special thanks to our listeners for tuning in today to Dignity and Respect in Action podcast. We welcome you back to campus, and we hope that you will continue to tune in throughout this semester. We have some great conversations coming down the pike. Thank you.